Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. And this is our Sabbath hour, which is usually a summation of what we talked about this morning on the regular Keys of the Kingdom program, which was a two-hour program, which we talked about parental rights and how they seem to disappear and what really causes them to disappear, which is the same thing that causes all your other rights to disappear. Is as you judge, so shall ye be judged. Quid pro quo. If you think it's okay to take from your neighbor, to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare, to your children's education, to taking care of your parents, to health care, whatever. You know, actually, I know a major corporation that has got some sort of deal for energy conservation where they can apply to have new pumps put in for equipment they have. And they're putting off buying the pumps themselves, which they could afford to buy, in order to apply to the government to get the government to buy the pumps for them. This is a private business, multi-million dollar company, going to get the government to buy the pumps for them. Banks get bailouts. All this idea of the government providing any kind of welfare, corporate welfare, private welfare, bank welfare, whatever kind of welfare you want. Public school is welfare. Social Security is welfare. Because there's no division of funds. All those welfare systems. Welfare, of course, is welfare. So all this is based on the idea that it's okay to take away from your neighbor so that you can have more stuff. That's what it's about. And this week, you know, I got an email from someone on the network, someone we've known for a long time. And they were talking about when they used to live on the street, because they used to live on the street, tried to, you know, live off the grid, so to speak. Although they were dependent a lot of times on other people, it was an adventure that they seemed to have to go through. And they came to meet a lot of different people. And one of them was a family that got on SSI. And he got on SSI because he faked. I think with him it was bipolar disorder. He faked it. Got a doctor to say he's got bipolar disorder so that he could get on SSI. And then he'd travel around in, I think, a trailer or motorhome or something. Don't remember the details. I never met him. Just I know the person who knew him. They would travel around and they could afford to do this because they had this regular check coming in. And, you know, they'd get to a town and maybe the wife or the daughter would go out and tell people they were out of gas and they needed gas for their vehicle and all this kind of stuff. And they'd get people to donate them gas. I know people at we only have one store within about 25 miles of us. And they've been hit up by people who said, oh, we don't have any money for gas. And they actually did. But if they get gas from you, they got more money left over. they're poor, so I guess they're deserving. And people fall for this. And it really gives a bad name to people who really do have a need because they're working the system. I know another person goes to church every day, regularly, faked PSD. Is it post? PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome or whatever. He faked it. He planned to fake it. He faked it. He got on permanent disability. And he worked, you know, training horses and mowing lawns and everything for cash. But he was getting this government check. Everybody knew it. Everybody at church knew it. And they let him do this. Because they don't really care about their neighbor as much as they care about, you know, their own. They, you know, want to go to church and feel comfortable. And they don't want to bring the truth into church, for heaven's sakes. You don't want to bring the truth into church. This guy not only beat his kids, he beat his grandkids. And they let him get away with it. It took a drug addict to stop him one day from beating his grandson. Holding him upside down, beating him out in the public, right out in the street. And a drug addict had to go up. The only one that had the courage to go up is somebody who's a drug addict. Amazing. Just astounding. And yet all the people at the church just let him get away with this. You know, because they think they're Christians. They're not. They're the problem. And that was the title of the show this morning. I've seen the enemy. He is us. Well, he's you anyway. And he's me. You know, I don't get welfare. I don't collect Social Security. I'm an old, old man. And I barely get by. And but I'm used to barely getting by. And with a little help from my friends and family, I'll probably continue to get by until I can't get by anymore. And then I'll die. So that's just the way life is. But do you live your life for others or you live your life for yourself? Christ didn't come to live his life for himself. He came to live his life for others. You have to answer to yourself and to God. Why are you living your life? How are you living your life? What are you doing? That guy got away with an awful lot of money from the government. And there's a lot of other people doing it. I mean, we always hear about welfare fraud and there's videos up of people saying, oh, this is what you do and you get more this way and you get more. And if you have two kids, you get more money. And so they just go get pregnant, have more kids. And they breed a society that is killing each other off. I mean, why are the blacks killing each other off so much in the black communities? I mean, just unbelievable rate of murder going on in the black communities. Welfare, drugs, welfare, breakdown of the family, fathers not in the homes. Like the guy says, it's more likely that you would be raised by both parents when you were slaves than when you lived in Detroit on welfare. That is breaking down the black family, and it's starting to break down the white family, and it's starting to work on the Oriental, the Asian families. They have the lowest statistic of broken families, but it's creeping into them because you now live in a welfare state. And it's welfare that is weakening the people, weakening the poor, weakening everybody. What strengthens them is charity, love for one another. And love for one another is something that has to be learned. It has to be practiced. Caring about one another has to be practiced. You know, I mentioned the fourth commandment, or depending on the numbering system in your church, but the one about honor thy father and thy mother so that thy days would be long upon the land. You take care of your parents and your children are more likely to take care of you. And if your parents can help you with homeschooling and so that you don't have to force your neighbor to teach your children. And you know, because see, when you do that, you alter the spiritual genetics of your children. When you go to a system that exercises authority one over the other, you alter the spiritual genetics of your children. And that's what I was originally going to talk about is genetics, genetically modified organism. And of course, normally that we call it GMOs, and it's supposed to be things like rapeseed and different things like the golden rice that they've invented that supposedly has the extra vitamins in it, vitamin A, which is necessary for healthy development of a child. A child could go blind, even die from lack of vitamin A. And a lot of Oriental countries, when they wean the children off of breast milk, where they naturally get vitamin A, they wean them onto a kind of a pablum made from rice. And if it's made from polished rice, it doesn't have any vitamin A in it. That was, you know, rickets was a disease that was a vitamin deficiency. And they discovered that it was a vitamin deficiency because a doctor was down there doing scientific experiments, raising chickens, feeding them rice, and they would be developing rickets, and then he would try to test them and find out why the chickens were developing rickets. Well, when he left to go away For a while, he left one of his helpers in charge of feeding the chickens. And he came back, and they were all cured of vitamin A deficiency, or rickets. And they were all cured. They're all better. And he thought, like, what the heck? What did you do? Why, and he found out that the guy says, well, you kept feeding them all this expensive polished rice. And chickens don't need polished rice. Save that for the people. So he was feeding them the unpolished rice. Well, the unpolished rice has a little bit of color on the outside shell. Well, it also has vitamins in that outside shell. They haven't polished it off. And so when they got the unpolished rice, they found out you don't get rickets from the unpolished rice. You cure rickets if you don't polish the rice. And so he went to the prison where they normally feed the prisoners a lot of rice, not a lot of vegetables and fruits and stuff, but just rice. And there were lots of cases of rickets. And it's the same with scurvy and stuff like that. You can get it because there's a deficiency of a certain vitamin. And so they started, and the prisoners all got upset because they weren't getting polished rice. Well, the fact is they discovered that that's all you needed to do. Now, with a child, if you're, weaning them off of breast milk, you really shouldn't, even if you made your gruel out of unpolished rice, you would still want to add other things to their diet so that they would, not suffer from vitamin A deficiency. And there's lots of things that you can add. Any kind of green leafy vegetables. I mean, dandelion leaves. You grind up a little dandelion leaves and you cook it with the pablum, and they're not going to have deficiency. Swiss chard, same thing, the leaves from Swiss chard, which is of the beet family. So if you're growing beets, see, most of these countries where they're growing rice, they can grow beets, they can grow spinach, they can grow turnip greens, they can grow Swiss chard. All these things have the carotene that will solve the vitamin A deficiency. But the guy who I was going to quote, who is talking about why we need GMOs, why GMOs are good, I'm sure he's either getting a kickback or he's just an idiot. But it's Patrick Moore, who used to be a part of Greenpeace and left Greenpeace because it got too corporate. And he's one of the spokesmen for an outfit which I strongly admire, which is PragerU, because they do give a lot of information out. Everything that PragerU says is not true. Everything that PragerU promotes is not true. I don't want people to believe PragerU because it's coming out of PragerU. Because Patrick Moore is wrong about his argument for GMOs. And the big argument was for the golden rice, which is... And one of the things that he says is that genetically modified organisms have been around for centuries and centuries. All plants get genetically modified because we consume genetic material, and that genetic material gets into us, and it can modify our genetic makeup. Well, yes and no. Usually when it modifies our genetic makeup, we call it cancer. And the body has numerous, at least three major defenses and a lot of little minor defenses against these genetically modified cells growing in your body to kill them out, because you do not want genetic modification that way. Laboratory genetic modification is not what goes on in nature, not in any way, shape, or form. Well, what does this all have to do with what we were talking about to begin with? Where as you judge, so shall you be judged. Is that when you take care of people through faith, hope, and charity, you alter society. You become a light in society. You become a peculiar people to what is now a normal society. It's normal to think that it's okay to send your kids to public school. It's okay to send your parents to get Social Security checks and Medicare and Medicaid. It's normal. But there's a spirit that comes with that practice. It actually it actually is carried with that practice into your very being, into the being of your children. You curse your children by doing this. Not just curse them with debt. You've all heard me say this. And that's what it says in the New Testament. It says that through your covetous practices, you would become merchandise. But it also says through those covetous practices, you would curse your children. And they would also become merchandise. But you would curse your children. Well, physically, you're cursing your children with debt. Because all your governments offer these benefits, not because they collect taxes, but because they borrow money. All governments are operating on borrowed money. Somebody just sent an email I saw, and I only got to read it briefly, but somewhere in there he talks about illegal money, illegal currency, like Federal Reserve notes are illegal. Federal Reserve notes are not illegal. They are legal currency. They are legal money. They're not lawful money. Just a question of terminology. Why would it be not lawful but legal? And what does it mean to be legal? Legal doesn't really have anything to do with law. What's lawful, what's righteous, what's just, or what's fair. Legal has to do with what binds you. And that's what legal tender is all about. And legal tender that is loaned into circulation binds you with debt. That's what makes you merchandise. That and your participation in covetous practices. But the legal tender is a part of that binding operation because it is binding you as surety for debt. It binds your children as surety for debt. Now, that's just a physical reality. You can look up the law. We write about it. We show you the laws. We show you how it works. It's worked that way since Rome. It's worked that way since Babylon. But now I'm talking to you, and I often save this for this program, about the spiritual binding that takes place. It takes place in the dark. It takes place in a dark realm, a realm that has no light of its own, but it's a light bearer realm. It takes light from other places, and it binds you. It binds the consciousness of you. It puts scales on your eyes so that you cannot see the truth. And I was talking to a minister this morning talking about this. What is a minister really supposed to do? Is a minister supposed to go out and preach the gospel and save people? He doesn't save anybody. We're saved by grace. I don't generate grace. I don't create grace. I don't save anybody. I'm bearing witness. Jesus uses the analogy of a light on a lampstand. You don't put it under a bushel basket. You show it. So when we go out into the world and when we deal with people, we are to be a light unto those people. Now, that means we should tell them the truth about things that they don't know about, and we do that all the time on the show. But there's actually a spiritual light that awakens things so that you see things inside yourself. And I've seen this happen many times, and a lot of people won't believe this, but that light can become uncomfortable to those who do not want to see the whole truth about themselves. And so they will try to figure out a way to stay away from you, to avoid you. They will create a scenario where they have to go, where you sent them away. You didn't send them away. They told you. It's like we had a minister once who was trying to figure out an excuse to leave. But he didn't want to leave because he knew we told the truth. But we also told the truth about himself that he didn't want to see. So he manufactured a situation where he said the minister that recognized him as a minister was doing wrong or doing evil or was serving the devil or something. And he just manufactured this and said it. But of course he says, well, I meant it metaphorically because he knows the guy really isn't doing that. But the guy, he's bearing witness to other people. So the minister says, I don't recognize you anymore as a minister. Somebody else can do it. I don't want to do it because you're spreading false information. I can't recognize you as a minister of Christ. That's the only power he has. He can't unmake him as an individual. He can't muffle him. He can't stifle his free speech. But he can say, I personally don't recognize you as a minister of Christ because what you're saying is not true. And the minister went through this process of explaining this and showing him, but the other one kept avoiding seeing the whole truth. He kept would avoid being on calls with him or meeting up with him. He just avoided that. But he was really avoiding the truth. Because when he was in the presence of that minister, he was made aware of a truth that was very uncomfortable, would actually bring him to tears at times. He didn't want to see it, at least at that time. Hopefully, before he passes away, he will want to see it. And those who serve God are there to be a light for him at any time he wants to see the light. But he wants to stay away from the light. He wants to move away from the light and live in his imagination. And that's where most Christians are. They want to live in the imagination that they're already saved. They've already accepted Jesus. They don't want to do what Jesus said, but they want to pretend to have accepted Jesus. And there's lots of ministers out there that are paid really good money to perpetuate that lie. And it brings the people under a strong delusion. So what does all this have to do with GMOs? Okay, Patrick Moore argues that GMO is a natural occurrence. Genetically modified organisms is a natural occurrence. And organisms do modify themselves through a process in nature. You know, when there's a shortage of food, when there's abundance of food, the animals will do something different. When you change the frequency, I give this story a number of times, but somebody took fish eggs and put them in an aquarium, put it in a Faraday box so it would not pick up the normal pulsing resonance that travels through the earth, and then pulsed in there an artificial resonance that was different than that of the earth. And so it kind of, they dampened the original resonance, and then they put a different one in there. The eggs hatched out, and the fish were almost unidentifiable. They were very uniform. They were very healthy. As a matter of fact, they were a little bit more healthy in appearances and activity than the control group normally born, because things in their genes turned on. And they, you know, this is what a lot of the New Agers are talking about, this heightened level of consciousness that's coming in the world. Most of them don't really understand what that's all about. You know, the awakening. You know, it talks about in the Bible an awakening. And there is an awakening. But there's an awakening to those people who want to see the truth, want to see the light. And the light, unfortunately, or fortunately, it's just the way it is, it's going to show you stuff about yourself, that you're a little unforgiving, that you're a little selfish, that you're a little impatient, and that you don't love as much as you would like to think you love. You don't care as much as you really would like to think you care, or certainly as much as you would like others to think that you care. The truth is very humbling, and some people just don't want to be humbled. They're not willing to be humbled. They're not willing to be humble. So, really, this is an individual journey towards the light. Go to the light, so to speak. You should be going to the light. And when you get closer to the light, it's going to show you stuff about you. And it's going to modify you. The light will modify you. You'll also be modified by the darkness. You'll be modified by the world, the flesh, and the devil. But when you go to the light, and how do you go to the light? Sacrifice that draws you near the light. That's why the word korban, which is sacrifice in the Hebrew, comes from a word that means to draw near. To be humble draws you near God. To sacrifice draws you near God. To lay down your life draws you nearer to God, which is the source of life. That's the keys to the kingdom. That's the secret. Being arrogant, proud, think you know it all, that is not the keys to the kingdom. Now, one of his complaints about Greenpeace was that it had become kind of too corporate. He thought of himself as the only one with a degree in ecological science, so supposedly that made him smarter. That's a degree coming out of liberal colleges that have, you know, the guys who are teaching ecological science, they are schooled ecological scientists. If you want to really know about ecology, you have to get out in nature and see the processes of what is going on. And you have to be objective about what you see. Almost every liberal I know who believes in socialism also believes in evolution. They believe that we evolve. But socialism is the opposite of evolution. It undermines evolution. Evolution is the survival of the fittest. You grow and you become, you know, you deal with the difficulties of life and you get stronger or you die. That's evolution. That's how it works. You get stronger or you die. But socialism is, you don't have to get stronger. We're going to take away from the strong and give to you. We're going to alter your genetics, the natural genetics of evolution, and we're going to change this. You know what's happening with GMOs now? Besides the spiritual ramifications of what genetically modified organisms are going to bring about, because you have men modifying those organisms with a profit motive. They want your money. They want you to depend upon them for seed. And they talk about it being this Trojan horse of biotechnological corporations, this golden rice. It is. But what's coming in is the spirit of wanting to grow more food for profit. And that spirit is moving their actions to genetically modify organisms. That's going to produce a different result than if you were actually moving from love and compassion, because you're operating on a different frequency. You're operating in a different realm, not in a realm of love, but in a realm of profit and gain at the expense of others, of desiring controlling the market. You want to control the market. That's the spirit that you're coming. That's demonic. That's what we describe as the devil himself, whether you believe in the devil or not. That's the characteristic of what we call the devil. He wants to profit from your service. Christ didn't come to profit from your service. He came to serve. Different spirit. Going to produce a different society, different results. And I said I'd talk about this too, which is the gas of peace, which was something that was mentioned in H.G. Wells' book of Things to Come. And this gas of peace was, you know, they'd drop it and everybody would be fighting and committing war, and they would go down and collect all the guns, and so nobody would fight anymore because everybody would go to sleep. The gas of peace caused them to go to sleep. Well, one guy died from it. Because he lived for war. He lived for violence. He lived for control. He found the fact that people feared him and obeyed him was intoxicating. He was addicted to power. Well, Monsanto is addicted to power. They're not operating out of love for you. So they're actually altering the genes, not only in the laboratory, but they're altering it according to a certain spirit. And already we see the seeds that have been genetically modified to be immune to Roundup and these herbicides are passing that on to other plants. And the genetically modified rapeseed is becoming a weed in other crops. And you can't kill it out because it's immune to the herbicides you have. So now you need new herbicides and you're going to compound the problem. You're destroying the very source of food for 7 billion people. You're undermining it. You're creating imbalances. And I did predict it back when, what was it, 1960s? Early 1960s. I introduced experiments that I was making with plant growth in the Houston Greater Science Fair. Won first place in my division. Probably didn't deserve it, but I won it just the same. But it was based on how to increase the growth of plants using chemicals and not using regular chemicals, but using the plants themselves. And of course, I was not advocating the chemical, the unnatural chemical hormones, but another process entirely. But since then, I also understand that there is a spiritual way to grow plants, to make things grow, to make things healthy, to alter things. See, most of the guys who are going around altering DNA, they really, you know, they're talking about splicing genes. Well, they're talking that double helix. Well, the double helix is only a minute part of the genes in a given living cell. There's another whole set of genes called epigenetic elements of that cell. That's where the real power is, not in the double helix. The double helix is important, but it's the epigenetics. And I've already written articles on that, and we can all look at that too. But what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back to Keys of the Kingdom. So welcome back. So, you know, to understand the dangers of GMOs is not nearly as important as understanding how you are genetically modified on a daily basis, because some genes in your body are turned off and turned on. There's lots of different ways to do this. You could introduce certain viruses in your body that might not actually make you sick. You know, like the P54 protein that is deactivated by a monkey virus that came in with a polio vaccine and has caused tumors all over your body, all over people's body, and mostly in the brain, and has killed thousands of people. And they know this, but they're not going to tell you. There's no money in telling you, and they worry about, you know, pandemonium and paranoia, and people will start not trusting doctors. Oh my gosh, we couldn't have that. But the doctors don't even understand that how these things are going on. You know, Gerald Berry, who's he's actually a native of Ireland. He's kind of listed as one of the first inventors of Monsanto's most valuable patents, and he found the gene that made crops immune to this weed killer Roundup, which is a lot like Agent Orange, a little bit more refined than Agent Orange, but basically, there's 2,4-D and 2,4-5-D, which is an artificial hormone, which is, you know, that's what I was using, artificial hormones to actually stimulate plant growth. But you can use hormones to do all kinds of things, because hormones turn on genetics in the cell. They turn on not necessarily the double helix, but they may turn on some of the epigenetics, which will turn on other things in the cell. But anyway, that gene that he created that you could splice in has been spliced into soybeans and corn and cotton and grown in hundreds of millions of acres. It's now in, you know, the same things going on with alfalfa and everything else, all of which are affecting the food that we eat. And there's all kinds of statistical evidence that is starting to come out, although very few people are gathering the statistics in a way that you can present it, because it costs money to do that. And there's no money in telling people you shouldn't be eating GMOs, you shouldn't be producing GMOs. And one of the interesting arguments, or lack of valid arguments that has been used, like the rapeseed is a Canadian crop. It's not just in Canada, but it's big up in Canada. And canola and rapeseed belong to the same kind of cabbage mustard family. But canola is actually Canadian oil. That's what it stands for. It's a change in the rapeseed, enough so to get less of some of the characteristics that they don't want, and more of the characteristics that they do want. Both have this characteristic kind of bright yellow color, and you get oil from both of the seeds by crushing the plant. That being said, they have a couple of key genetic differences. And this is how you have genetic alterations in different plants. The canola, Canadian oil, was created through a traditional plant breeding in order to get rid of two undesirable components of rapeseed and you know, the glucosinolates and uric acids that you have in some of the rapeseeds, which makes it more palatable. The interesting thing is that it took a lot of work and labor to modify those plants through natural breeding. But they didn't patent that. They don't patent that. The courts don't patent that natural process. They only patent genetically modified through a laboratory, which is, you could actually do genetic modification in your kitchen. It's not that big a deal. But, you know, the more equipment you have, the easier you can do these things, and then you can isolate stuff. So obviously it does take a certain amount of equipment and certainly a certain amount of know-how to get desired results more efficiently. But breeding takes a certain amount of know-how. So now say you got purebred canola, which is it took you generations to produce this canola seed that has less of this uric acid and other glucoses so that it's more palatable. And then somebody comes along and just through negligence drops genetically modified rapeseed in the ditch near your fields, which crosses over and breeds your genetically modified, breeds your naturally bred but genetically modified through natural breeding rapeseed or canola seed, same thing. Now the government comes along and says you have to destroy all your seed. Took three generations to produce this seed, but you have to destroy it because Monsanto has a patent on their genetically modified seed, but they won't give you a patent on your genetically modified seed. Well, that's a crime. They're causing you to have to destroy the naturally bred seed that produces a much more palatable oil and sometimes more oil. I mean, like plums. Luther Burbank prune. I have one right outside the door. Before Luther Burbank, plums were about the size of your thumbnail. And he, through crossbreeding and selective breeding, which he attributes his ability to do this, not simply to the natural genetics that he used to crossbreed these same, you know, plums with plums and then grafting and all these kinds of things, but he actually spoke to his plants. He said he never sold a plant out of his nursery that did not respond to the sound of his voice. He was inventing new plants that, without genetically modifying them in a laboratory, simply by talking to them and breeding them and doing some really bizarre things that are perfectly a part of nature, because he understood nature. When he was 7 years old, when he was 8 years old, he was coming up with new things that are still being used today. And he did it because he said Jesus was guiding him. Now you would say, what a crackpot. Except for the fact you go look up Luther Burbank. Go down to a big library and get the volumes of new plants that he has produced through natural breeding and selection. And you'll say, well, my gosh, how could one man do all this? Make all these changes. I mean, this guy fed the world with the changes that he made. Burbank potatoes, that's him. Stark Brothers, that's Burbank. That's his, that came from his original work. Stark Brothers, Starks married his daughters. This is the way you should be doing it. Breeding new plants out of love, not for profit. You're going to change the nature of your plants. I mean, it's you know, like I really thought the movie wasn't very good. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, where plants kind of rise up and are poisoning, driving people crazy, so they kill themselves. That's really not too far from the truth, because you are destroying your agriculture in so many ways. I could go through, you know, used to be seed cleaners, 600 seed cleaners traveling up and down the Midwest, cleaning seeds so that farmers could replant the seeds from the year before, cleaning them, in other words, taking all the weed seeds out and everything through these big cleaners that they would blow and run through screens and everything, and so that it would only be corn seeds or soybean seeds or wheat seeds that you were planting back in the ground and not reinfesting the ground with weed seeds. They're all gone. They don't exist anymore. You can't do that anymore. These people have to buy their seeds from major corporations. If that source of seed dries up, Americans will starve by the millions. This has already happened in the last century. The Soviet Union took the seed grains out of, you know, sections of their country that were the big grain growers, and millions of people starved because of this. They interrupt the natural flow of the reproduction of food. That is what's being set up now. Except now we're not going to have just millions of people starve, we're going to have billions of people starve. And the reason, you won't know where to go. You won't know where to be. You want to stock up? Go ahead, try it. The real treasure is to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness, because you need to have the Spirit of Christ in you to have life more abundant. People are worried about prosperity gospel. This is a survival gospel. You're not going to survive unless you put on the character of Christ and let it ingrain itself into you. So what was Christ doing? He was building a city on the hill. And that was one of the things that we were going to talk about. I don't know how, we got a little bit of time here. So what is a city on a hill that he was talking about, this city on a hill? We see this word city in the Bible over and over and over again. In the Old Testament, it actually has to do with something that is terrifying or whatever. But it's actually from the Greek word polis. And polis, and I'll quote other people, polis was not always a place, but it could also be something that you were part of, like a community. It can also mean a citizenship and a body of citizens. According to Gerald Casey, professor emeritus of the University of College of Dublin, a polis was neither a city nor a state, but a sort of fellowship. So when he was saying a city on a hill, was he talking a fellowship on a hill? In Aristotle, Politics, in his Politics, which is something he wrote, it is suggested that a polis is something more than a collection of individuals seeking safety in life and gain in the exercise of trade. It was a union of families and villages in a perfect self-sufficing life, by which we mean happy and honorable life. I mean, that's a quote from him. A polis might have members, as we think of citizens of a state, because you're a part of a polis. If you're a citizen of Australia or United States or Canada, you're a part of a polis. But Christ had a different kind of polis, a different kind of fellowship, a different kind of body that operated by faith, hope, and charity. Its ministers were not in it for the money. Its ministers were not in it for a profit. The ministers were there to serve. They had a heart for service. They had a charitable heart. And that's, you have to find the men who have that charitable heart. They will be hardworking men. They will be men who got married, stayed married, took care of their family, raised their family. It's in their nature to do that. That no one had to bind them or twist their arm to do these things. They would just do this. They will be there for others. because it's in their nature and they have a history of that nature. The Pharisees were more like your modern ministers today. I mean, I'm sure there were good Pharisees, but there were a lot of Pharisees that were in it for the prestige and the profit. They say their great prayers and everybody looks up to them, but they were not providing a daily ministration through faith, hope, and charity by that time. Their Corban, their sacrifice was making the word of God to none effect because they got the people to enter a different kind of polis, a different kind of social structure, and it was altering the people. Like Polybius says, it was changing the nature of society. So you need to change the nature of that society back. So you need to be turning around your thinking and seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Dr. Moshe Barent, he's from Israel, works in Israel. He talks about a polis. Wrote a whole article about what a polis is. He says, though the notion of a free and self-governed community originated in ancient Greece, the Greek polis seems to pose a problem for the modern post-Hobbesian concept of sovereignty. For the latter presupposes that the state, that is an agency which monopolizes the use of violence as an instrument by which sovereignty is constituted. Now, sovereignty is a misunderstood word. Sovereignty is a lawmaker. Well, God is the only one who's sovereign, but you may make other men sovereign by electing lawmakers to make laws for you, to fight your battles for you, to protect you, to take away from your neighbor if your neighbor is not charitable enough to sustain you in your time of need, to force the contributions of your neighbor for your well-being. All that is anti-Christ. All that is against what Christ taught and preached. Moshe goes on to write, yet the polis was not a state, but rather what the anthropologists called the stateless community. Now that was at one time, but stateless communities can become state communities, just like the welfare state. That's not a stateless community. The welfare state depends upon electing men who will exercise authority and compel the offerings of the people, all anti-Christ. But originally, when Greece was free, the polis was not a state, but rather what the anthropologists called this stateless community. The latter is characterized by the absence of government, that is, of an agency which has separated itself from the rest of social life and which monopolizes the use of violence. So it's not a part of that. In the stateless societies, the ability to use force is more or less evenly distributed amongst the armed or potentially armed members of that community. In other words, a militia, the people. The hue and cry of the people is called out when somebody's robbing somebody else, when somebody is oppressing somebody else. It is the ultimate division of power. We have this reference to division of powers in the three branches of government. But that's extremely centralized compared to the natural polis of ancient Greece. The ancient ways. My wife was just reading out of Proverbs today. Proverbs 22 talks about not removing the ancient landmarks, the ancient marks of society, the barriers, the boundaries of society. Ten Commandments. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love, don't kill him. Don't murder him. Don't steal from him. Don't covet his goods. You know, these are boundaries that we should not remove from our society, from our thinking. Well, if you're coveting your neighbor's goods by wanting benefits from the state, you've removed the boundary of thou shalt not covet. If you want the state to take care of your parents, your sacrifice makes the word of God to none effect, because it's not a sacrifice born out of love for your parents. It's a sacrifice born out of the fact that you are willing to force your neighbor to contribute to your old age. Except for the system is running bankrupt because you've empowered men to make choices you should be making. In a community, in a stateless community, where people care about one another through faith, hope, and charity. But that takes real sacrifice. Do you want to do that or not? So back to being the stateless. Then what sense can we say that the polis was sovereign? That's what Moshe asks. On the practical level, the Greek polis had a very limited ability to control or direct legislation. It had almost no ability to control or direct legislation where he was making laws for other people. People would gather together for information to take that information back to the other people and share it with them from men that you trusted, because those men were in the business of love, in the business of charity, in the business of creating hope that others would be there for you when you had a need, because they were helping you be there for others when they had a need. This is the whole point of the ministry. It isn't to sit up there and tell you what to believe. It's to help you perform your duty to God and your fellow man, and that duty to God is to love his ways of life, and your duty to a fellow man is to love your fellow man in a way that strengthens him. But the systems of the world weaken men by offering them benefits without a moral criteria, without those boundaries, those Ten Commandments. They offer them benefits at the expense of others, even the unborn. Everybody's worried about abortion, which of course is a symptom of this kind of society. But it is the unborn that will pay back the debts you are creating today with their own labor, which they will have to labor forever and ever and ever, if God was not the great equalizer. That's where they're taking you. But there will come a great equalizer, an equalizing event. But you won't see it coming. You won't, even when if you happen to get an idea of it coming, you won't know what to do. Moshe goes on to say, the decentralized nature of the Greek society and the absence of coercive apparatus meant that the laws had to be identical with the customs of the community, or else that decision had to be shared by a wide consensus, which imposed a severe limitation on the ability of the polis to change their laws or to initiate changes in a community. So in other words, driving on the right-hand side of the road, well, you could, that's custom. You would work that out. How to take care of one another? Are the Greeks being neglected? Well, look out amongst yourself, find men you trust. We've been studying this for half a century. And we have read materials that are written centuries and centuries ago, and we share that with everybody for free. Our entire website is created and offers you all these audios and videos and articles for free. But it won't do you any good unless you begin to turn around your thinking, gather together, and seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. So this is what Christ was doing. I mentioned Shapiro was saying that you needed to create these networks that help one another outside of government. That's exactly what Christ was doing. That's what the church was, to be separate from the state, even separate from the people, but funded only by people who care about their neighbor. Not funded so you could build big cathedrals or put up statues or put in big screen TVs or a new band sound system so you can all feel good on Sunday or Sabbath. To actually take care of the needy of your society in faith, hope, and charity. And the hardworking, industrious people who have resources and businesses and families and everything, when those people come together, you have something of power. Power that will withstand the days to come. And so, but you have to come together. And that's why we created the network. So everybody should join the network and at preparingyou.com, Join in your local areas. Start forming congregations. Start helping one another. And find out what's the best way to do that. And until you do, I can only say peace on your house. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.